Ik ben Rolinka Bloeming uit Amsterdam en ik reis graag met Rick Steves. In Dutch, that is, I'm Rolinka Bloeming from Amsterdam and I love to travel with Rick Steves. En in Dutch, ik ben Rolinka Bloeming uit Amsterdam en ik reis graag met Rick Steves.
Dank u wel. When you were in school, you might have seen them referred to as the Benelux countries. Belgium, the Netherlands, and Little Luxembourg. Squeezed in between mighty France and Germany, they're often overlooked by tourists. But as the host to so much of the earliest action that gave rise to the European Union, and with Brussels as the center of much of the EU's authority, this region is not to be underestimated. Right now on Travel with Rick Steves, let's find out how this corner of Europe, that's also called the Low Countries, really stands tall as one of the most influential, innovative, and well-organized corners of the continent. Joining us to better appreciate the Low Countries are two Belgian-born friends of mine who've been guiding visitors around their homeland for years. Nina Derrick specializes in gourmet food adventures, and Ferdinando Mengi leads tours all over the area. Ferdi and Nina, thanks for joining us.
Hi.
Rick. Nice to be here.
You both speak Flemish, right?
Yeah.
That's Flemish. Right.
Yeah. Flemish. How do you say good day in Flanders?
Hallo, goeiedag.
Goeiedag.
Goeiedag, yeah. Goeiemorgen, goeiedag.
So first of all, when we talk about Belgium, it's a country that's split between two ethnic groups.
Absolutely. Mainly between the Flemish in the north and then the Walloons in the south, so the French-speaking people of Belgium. But we can't forget a German community in the east of Belgium as well. That's 70,000 people.
70,000. And that's a good reminder that you cannot just draw a line and say French people here and German people there. There's always a little bit of fuzziness, isn't there?
There is. And that's where mainly the problems are, in the border regions where the Walloons meet the Flemish mainly.
It's not only because of us. I mean, I think the average people are getting along very well. It's the politicians. They don't get along well. And that's the problem right now.
Now, when we think about the split of Belgium, it sort of is where the north and the south of Europe comes together, isn't it? There's the Romance languages and the Catholic heritage, and then there is the Protestant and the Germanic languages in the north. And this is sort of a cultural fault line that runs right across between France and Germany, between
right.
Germany and Italy. And in the far west, you actually split Belgium this way.
Yes. Yeah, so it's kind of, if you look up on Belgium, and Nina knows this as well, I mean, it's like you can see the line in between the north and the south.
Now, I would say that even you can even see that in the art, because historically, the big patrons of the art would have been the kings and the emperors and the popes and the bishops, and that would be characteristic of southern art. And in the north, you've got more merchant communities and proud Protestant, you know, freedom from church government and this sort of thing. And that would show itself in the sort of the natural patrons of the art would shape the kind of art you're going to see.
Well, look at the Golden Age. I mean, the northern part of that part, northern Belgium, Holland, and all that area, the Golden Age, all that fantastic
That's all merchant's art.
All merchant's art.
You don't see many saints or emperors.
All merchants. You remember, if you go to Amsterdam, for example, and you see that Rijksmuseum, you don't see any religion, it's all moved back to the back, and it's in the front is what happened, merchants and stuff.
And in the front, you've got your nice food, your nice silverware, all the riches that you earned because you're
earned.
A good capitalist.
Exactly.
Yeah, I would say, too, that Flanders is definitely more of an agricultural background, a farmer's culture, and the Dutch are not much more known as the merchant culture.
And for us, it's a little more conservative, maybe,
absolutely.
In Belgium.
So Belgium is more conservative.
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. They're far more reticent, being farmers, whereas the Dutch are merchants.
They're merchants. They've been traveling.
That's interesting, too. So the Dutch really are famous for their the Dutch East India Company and Henry Hudson and all of this. Small country, great power, great merchant marines. And in Belgium, you've got more of a farming heritage. And when you're in Belgium, you've got some great beer.
Absolutely, but I really think that Ferdi is the one to talk about beer, not me.
Ferdi is the one for beer. Ferdi, last time I was in Belgium, I met these beer pilgrims.
I met
so many people from America going over to Belgium just to drink the beer.
Well, they have beer tours now. You know, you do a beer tour, you sign up for a tour. You can go, for example, let's give you an example. Antwerp, just a city up in the north. They do beer tours in the city, where you can go to authentic bars where you stand still on a 16th, 17th century floor, like a wooden floor, and you drink at the glasses, you know, they've been using for centuries, and you have a guide who's a beer guide. explains how they made the beer and who drank the beer.
And they're evangelical about it. They
love
it.
Oh my gosh, it's a beer.
I went to the restaurants are quite expensive, but you go to a little pub and you're surrounded by this centuries-old ambiance and coziness.
Yes.
And you feel like you're drinking in the middle of a Vermeer painting.
It is, yeah. It's like
It's a scene out of Vermeer with a very nice beer.
And don't forget, one of those heavy monastic beers, you don't just drink down, you linger over it. We say, we do a terrace. That's how we say it. Let's do a terrace. And it generally means that you drink one of those heavy monastic beers, always with promising titles like Judas, Duvel, or The Forbidden Fruit, which
Forbidden
is one of my favorites.
Yeah, that's like that.
And you linger over that. You don't just drink three down very quickly. It's an evening's entertainment.
Oh, yeah.
In the Netherlands, you know, these pubs are sort of great equalizers, and it's this warm and cozy gezellig. Is that a word?
Gezellig, yes.
Gezellig in Flemish?
Great, yes.
Gezellig, this coziness. And you got the rich boys and the poor boys and the farmers and the lawyers everybody there enjoying this great beer.
And don't forget, every beer has its own glass.
Yes, that's very important.
So presentation is very, very important.
This is very important.
Yeah, they will never serve you a Duvel in a Forbidden Fruit glass ever. It's always the original glass.
Now, is there any reason for that, or is it just simply tradition?
It's a religion.
It's a religion.
It's a status.
I can't drink a Stella Artois without the right Stella glass.
It tastes different.
You're right. Yeah. And even a simpleton, when it comes to beers, he catches into that.
As I walk along the street with my mayonnaise and frites, you can tell I'm as happy as can be. With my Duvel in my hand, then you must understand, I'm a Belgian, so nothing worries me. Hut verdekker, it's great to be a Belgian. I'm not English, I'm not French, and I'm not Dutch.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're traveling through the Low Countries. And to be honest, we're ignoring Luxembourg on this interview. And we're talking about Belgium and the Netherlands. I'm joined by Nina Derricks and Ferdinando Mengi. And our phone number is 877-333-7425. You can email us at radio@ricksteves.com. And David is on the line from Nashville, Tennessee. David, thanks for your call.
My pleasure. Goedemiddag to your guest.
Hey, goedemiddag.
Goedemiddag.
My wife and I spent 12 years in Europe, including 5.5 years in the Netherlands and 3 months in Belgium. And we've been back 15 years now in the United States, but we've decided to start hosting groups in Europe with the idea of promoting what we call cultural intelligence among Americans. And we're taking a group to London, Paris, and Amsterdam, each for 1 week. And, of course, we have our ideas about Amsterdam, having lived there for several years, but wondering if your guests could recommend some, maybe just 2 or 3 day trips out from Amsterdam.
Well, the nicest part about being there is that you don't have to drive all that far to see things. So you don't have to think about, oh, my gosh, I'm not going to make it. I have to drive like 4 or 5 hours. No, it's very near. For example, Arnhem is as far as I would say the Open Air Museum. It's a good hour drive from Amsterdam.
Open air Arnhem,
which is, you know,
Arnhem.
Yeah, it's like a good hour and a half from there, which is very doable if you want to do it for a day.
Now, that would be the best open air folk museum experience, which is an opportunity to see historic buildings from all corners of that country.
Yes.
The Netherlands, brought together into one park.
Yep.
So it's living sort of cultural folk park.
Wonderful place to go visit.
That's the best. I would say that's the best serious sightseeing side trip.
I would say that. That's why I mentioned
1 hour by train or car. Yeah. To the east. What's another side trip, Ferdy?
I would say go to the Zaanse Schans, for example, which you have all the windmills, which is not that far from Amsterdam. You can do it like in half an hour or so, 45 minutes. Beautiful setting also with kind of a typical farm, but especially windmills.
I would say nothing distance-wise is far in Belgium or Holland at all.
No.
So really, even if you go to Antwerp from Amsterdam, Ferdy, what would it take? Would it take an hour and a half?
Hour and a half. If you go by train, it's an hour and a half. And Antwerp is a beautiful
absolutely.
City
and then you
to
have
visit.
I would say you got to check out the flowers. And there's the flower auction hall in
Alsmeer.
Alsmeer. And that's right by Schiphol Airport.
Yeah, that's only a 20 minute.
So go there early in the morning and you'll see what they say is the biggest building in Europe, and it's filled with flowers.
Yeah. It's huge.
And they have this fascinating auction going on where all over Europe, flower merchants are coming together here, getting their flowers, and then they ship them out. It's huge business.
There's so much. We can sit here forever and talk about all the sites, and they just keep on popping in my mind what you can see. But those three we just mentioned are great ones.
David, does that make any sense to you?
Absolutely. Now, did you say Alsmeer or Almere? for the
Aalsmeer. A-A-L-S-M-E-E-R.
Because I remember there are two different cities.
Yeah, you have Almere as well.
My favorite single town outside of the giant city of Amsterdam is Haarlem. If you want to make a home base. I think Haarlem is, again, it's one of those Vermeer painting sort
of situations. That's a 10-minute ride with a train.
Haarlem is definitely on our list. I don't know if you've ever been to the Ten Boom house.
Corrie Ten Boom, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, anybody who's interested in The Hiding Place, it's an inspirational story from World War II and the Nazis and the Jews hiding out and everything. Yeah. It's a beautiful experience. It's a clock shop that actually doesn't like all the tourists coming in and saying, where's Corrie Ten Boom's house? But upstairs was the place where the Ten Boom family lived and helped local Jewish people hide out from the Nazis.
Exactly.
And they did a heroic job, and eventually weren't they discovered, and that was a sad ending.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And today, several times a day, they give very charming, earnest, one-hour tours
in English
for people who want to visit that.
Right. And also, I think it's good to gear it to our demographic. Like, if we have several teenagers in our group, would you recommend anything different from what you've already said?
Get those teenagers on bicycles, because in Holland, you are king of the road. You have cycling paths in the middle of roads, and you have priorities.
Mm-hmm.
So really, it's like being in China. Everybody's born on a bicycle. Get them on there. Go to any tourist office. They have fixed routes, and let them take off.
You know, when I go to Amsterdam, I go there every couple of years for 4 days to research. I rent a bicycle. I park it in front of my hotel, and it's my way of getting around. If I had a taxi provided to me for free, I'd tell them to go home. I'd rather bike in that town. It is so fun to bike as just a practical way of getting around in Holland. I would argue it's faster than a car. You can get around where you want really comfortably.
And if you want to be away from the city, you can go to the North Sea. If you go to the beach area, you know, there's such beautiful bicycle paths and the polders there and the dunes, like we call them. And you can bicycle for miles there.
And there's specific cycling roads, really, through the back door. It's fantastic.
Yeah. David, take your kids on a bike tour out into the countryside from Amsterdam. That sounds like a great idea.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, David, thanks. Good luck on your trip.
Thank you very much. Dank u vriendelijk.
Okay.
Dag.
Well, of course, they call the Low Countries because there's not many very big mountains there, right?
No.
They say you can stand on a chair and see from one end of the other to the other country.
Yes.
In fact, the Dutch have this charming phrase. They say, God made the world, but the Dutch, we made Holland.
Exactly. That's true, though.
And there's some serious work going on now in anticipation of rising sea level. Are they making the dikes actually higher?
Well, they're enforcing the dikes. And since now global warming, we still don't know 100% what the effect is on the world, but we have to be prepared. It takes years.
You guys saw what happened in New Orleans.
Of course.
And that was a levee problem.
Yes.
And you're surrounded by levees.
Yes. Unfortunately, we learned from their mistakes.
Most of the Netherlands below sea level.
Yep.
One entire state reclaimed from below sea level, Flevoland.
Flevoland, yeah. With Lelystad as the city there.
I think one-fifth is reclaimed.
Holland.
The people in Flevoland are older than the land they live on.
Yes, it's amazing.
And as a traveler, you can actually experience this. You can go to museums that talk about reclamation.
Oh, gosh, yes. They explain everything out there. It's such beautiful museums where they really
What's the best
clear.
Place to learn about the whole engineering of holding back the sea.
You go to Delta Works, you know.
Tell me about that.
Remember when 1953, when they had this big flood, 1,800 people died overnight because they didn't expect the lineup of the planets and so forth. And then this high water I was there recently, and it's amazing what they created there.
So the Delta Works, this is where all these rivers that eventually become the Rhine River ended.
The Rhine, the Maas, and they all come together. So really, if you look at the
delta
map of
area,
that,
dumps the Delta into the sea. Area,
and it's just, can you imagine, think about, we're just going to close off the North Sea. I mean, think about it for an instance. It's like amazing. And they did it. And it's working great with the...
It's a determination. And it's part of the character of the Dutch people to take care of their land. They live very densely together.
Look in the world, all the works that's been done by water. For example, in Tokyo, that airport that's built on the water, it's built by the Dutch.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. If you want to have some land made, Rick, somewhere, call the Dutch.
If you want to get some swamp land and turn it into dry land, give the Dutch a call.
Absolutely. They are fantastic engineers.
And Matt's on the phone in Chicago. Hi, Matt. Thanks for your call.
Hi, Rick. Really appreciate your program. My wife and I actually traveled to France a few months back and decided to take a little trip for 3 or 4 days up to Belgium. It turned into 6 days because we had such a wonderful time. And, of course, we visited Brussels and Bruges. But one area that we stopped over and ended up spending 2.5 days in, and it was kind of a surprise to us, was Ghent. And Ghent, I don't know how familiar you are with it, but it really has some wonderful sights and a great culture to it. So I'm curious kind of your guest feelings on Ghent, I would highly recommend it based on the sites. It's kind of a grittier version of Bruges, if you will. It's a university town, but there's beyond even the Adoration of the Mystic Lamb, which is the one main site that a lot of people know about. I think there's a lot of neat stuff to do. And then if there's any other cities like that around the Belgian countryside that would be suggested, my wife and I can't wait to get back.
And to give a context to this, of course, Brussels is the capital, and you got to see that. And Bruges is everybody's favorite beautifully preserved medieval town in a fanciful kind of way. And Matt, you hit it right on the nail. Ghent is sort of a big, rough version of Bruges with one great medieval altarpiece to see. Nina, any other thoughts on Ghent?
Yes, I think in Belgium, Ghent is often overlooked. I think Bruges is like a living museum. And it's wonderful to wander around in its little streets. But Ghent is a city with a fantastic history, equally great as Bruges, but it's a very much a living, buzzing town today.
Yes.
And I like nothing more than wandering around in the streets of Ghent, and you just automatically get drawn into its cafes and its fish market. It's fantastic. It's about 250,000 people, but you really feel this city is buzzing today, with a rich history behind.
And much as I love Bruges, and everybody's got to go to Bruges, to be honest, it's a tourist trap. I mean, it is. Its whole industry is tourism.
Love Bruges.
Everybody is taking care of the tourists. You'll pay probably double to stay in Bruges than in Ghent.
Yeah.
And Ghent probably gets one out of 100th of the tourism.
Of course.
And it's a real city.
Yeah, it is really a magnificent city. And there's, you know, you hear Prague is the city of 1,000 spires. But as we looked at our hotel room, there's spires everywhere. There's four or five churches that rise up in the Belfort. My wife and I stumbled onto the Opera House and found day of the event seating. And I think it only cost us like 7 or 8 euro a piece. Now, of course, we were up in the rafters.
All right.
Good advice, Matt. Thanks for your call.
Take care.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking about Belgium and the Netherlands with Ferdinando Mengi and Nina Derricks. Ferdi and Nina, we'd stumbled onto that word earlier, gezellig. It's a Flemish word, and Flemish would work in the Netherlands and most of Belgium.
Yes.
And gezellig is that unique coziness. Let's just close with an image. If you could both share with me something particularly gezellig about your homeland that travelers would want to be sure to connect with.
I would say the hospitable people we have, the hospitality we have, we are very inviting. I don't want to focus totally on English-speaking people or Americans, but Nina knows as much as I do. We all love to speak English. I mean, you go into a bar or go to a restaurant, they all want to listen to you. They want to tell how wonderful we are, how great our food is, for example.
And yes.
Also, our restaurants, our bars are gazelle.
That's gazelle.
Cozy.
Definitely.
That's gazelle.
That's it. I can.
And
think
being
the,
together is gazelle.
Maybe the most gazellic atmospheres to eat.
That's gazelle. For us
in Flanders,
Or linger behind one of those beers, and then you really get people talking.
Yes, then they start talking and
eating. And then you can ask about where do you think I should go and eat. Don't look into all those Michelin guides and recommendations for restaurants. Talk to the local people and you really will get them going and you'll end up in their favorite restaurant. And how more Belgian or Dutch can you get?
That's a gazellic place. They would show you definitely a gazellic spot.
Perfect advice. Dank u wel. Nina Derricks and Ferdi Mengi.
I should be free.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Europe Through the Back Door in Edmonds, Washington, by Tim Tatton with Sarah McCormick and Isaac Kaplan-Wolner. Our technical team includes Andrew Wakeling, Jonathan Lee, Chris Luchik, and Kate Mulhern-Graham. Our theme music is by Jerry Frank. There's more online in the radio department at ricksteves.com. We'll look for you again next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.
Travel with Rick Steves is made possible in part by the European Union delegation to the USA. Tips about traveling in Europe and information about the EU are available at euintheus.org.